thank you very much. Hey, look at who's back for our very sporadic podcast from Italy. It's the 13th of December, 7-something in the morning on a overcast, warm, blustery winter's day.
Yes.
We were awoken by the dogs this morning at a ungodly 5-something for the little one to pee. So everyone's been walked, fed. The chickens are fed. The cows are the pigs are fed.
And everyone's back to sleep. So we thought, finally, we should try to fire up these mics. We've had them on the table for about a week now, thinking we're going to do a podcast and not having time. So let's give it a shot. Welcome back.
We should reset.
Okay. Welcome to our farming and cooking school, La Tavola Marche, in our little slice of life podcast from Italy.
We really have been sporadic in doing this the last couple of years because it just seems like everyone does a podcast now, and I've run out of our own stories. I'm bored with our own stories.
Well, let's recap the summer. Let's start there.
Well, we can do that. The summer was, the season went well.
It was a great busy season. Baptism. We became godparents. We had a surprise wedding. There was tons of family reunions and 60th birthdays. And it was great with the guests. And Jason was busy. And my Aunt Lisa came out, which was fun.
Aunt Lisa came.
I know. Jason had some projects he was working on.
Yeah, we got the stall for the animals built down in the pig area.
This is no just like simple stall.
Well, it's just a roof, and it still doesn't have walls.
True, but it's
I kind of petered out.
I know, but it's beefy.
So we have to decide. We'll get more into the animal talk later. But
how big is the stall?
The stall is 6 meters by 4 meters.
Okay.
So it's a good size.
Mm-hmm.
It's no joke.
Plus, we built a agricultural tunnel.
Yeah, like a big tent. Prefab tent thing to keep like
equipment
hay and that sort of thing. So it's getting there down there. The pigs this autumn have decided to take my beautiful French drain that drains all the water coming off the little hill behind the cement pad that was done
over the summer
and cover it with dirt so that the water doesn't seep into the rock and go away. It just kind of floats over the dirt and goes back onto the cement pad. Awesome.
Perfect.
Awesome.
It's like they knew what they were doing.
I've fixed it twice now, and I'm just going to wait until after we slaughter the pigs to fix it the third time because it's useless.
How were the pigs over the summer?
The pigs were great. They're my buddies. It's going to be tough to see them go this winter, but we'll get more into that later, I guess. things in the garden. The season was strange. We were wearing jeans in early June, and we had tomatoes until almost November. So everything was kind of like a month pushed.
Yeah, and just warm and windy. It was the fall was the freaking windiest I can never remember. We would wake up or late at night go and check to make sure that the agricultural tent was still there because it was like, oh my God, this is just sustained wind.
Yeah.
It was not like, oh, a windy day here or there. It was like just
weeks
of just strong winds.
Just wind burned outside.
Yeah.
But it's calmed down now. We had a good freeze a couple of weeks ago, but the mild weather returned again. And it's 12 degrees outside this
morning.
It's
weird. We'll go from like -5 in the morning to 12 or 13 in the morning. It is all over the place. But talk of town is still snow.
Talk of town.
I hope so.
So let's get into it. Start on the list. We made a little list. Let's talk about it.
Oh, speaking of the summer, here's one that was a fun. Okay. We take Leroy out super early because it would get so hot and then way late at night.
Leroy the giant Great Dane.
Yes. And so in the summer, I thought, oh, great. Always an idea is to walk the river back home or walk into the river for part of the walk because it's just kind of fun. In the summer, you wait till the water gets low enough and just have some like tennies on or something that you're just going to get wet and go. So it was like, all right, let's do it. We're going through. I'm making all this noise because I'm still nervous for other animals, but also I'm really focused on snakes because there are vipers and snakes in the river at times. So I was just like watching for snakes the entire time. Then we are getting so close to the house that I'm thinking, whoa, we are going to make it all the way back. And I don't know how many feet in front of me because I'm terrible with this, but just up ahead, I'm looking up and a gigantic boar comes out from the side of the river edge into the river, looks straight at us, and I just scream. And I just go, fuck! And I probably scared it more than it scared me. Turn on my heel, ran with Leroy all the way back to the next spot where you could get out of the river, because this is now summer, so it's overgrown on the edges, not in the winter where you can really get through when everything's died away. So it's like we have to run way back around another couple bins to get of the river to get to where the tractors cross. And it was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And I totally freaked out. It was super exciting, but super terrified. And I thought, what the hell do I do? We were talking about getting like mace, or then Jason was cracking up going, you would end up just spraying yourself, which is totally true.
If the boar jumps out at you, you don't really have time to get it out of your pocket. Hold one moment, please, while I get out my protection.
Exactly. So then we were thinking about like a horn, something. And I know. And then we decided a simple solution right now is to have Leroy run around with a bell on, which a lot of the hunting dogs do to scare away some of the porcupine, the boar, things like that. If you hear his dingle dangle in the woods, the animals tend to kind of retreat a bit. But Jason saw a ton of different boar tracks, and you guys almost came upon a pack of boar. You saw them in the field one time.
We see animal. Well, he likes to go with sun up and sundown, so mm-hmm. we see a lot of different animals going around. Now that the hunting season's in full effect, it's been honestly less. We'd see lots of deer in the spring, in the summer, and we'd see boar tracks all over the place, porcupine quills everywhere, but not so much now.
No.
If it's moving, it's
no. I talked to one of the hunters yesterday in town, and he said they had already gotten 60 boar from along our valley here since,
I believe it,
like, October.
Yeah, October 1st it started. Uh-huh. The boar make terrible, they dig into the fields and make these big pools where they go and hang out. And terrible, terrible damage
they
to them.
They create like mud ponds.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It is so much damage. But speaking of the hunters, they love Leroy.
Leroy is the hit of the valley this year again. Last year he was a puppy, so
So they like kind of saw him, but he wasn't as...
We weren't as... all over the place.
Correct.
Yeah.
And now we've done it where you go in the woods and some old guy stops you and wants to take a picture because he's been telling his wife about how big the dog is. Oh, can you get a picture with me of the dog? I took him into town a week or so ago and we're walking through the little park. It's totally empty. It's kind of drizzly rain. And at that little park in Piobico, there is, I don't know, would you call it a water fountain? Well, where the water comes off from the mountain.
A spring. A place to fill up water bottles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they've made a really beautiful little spot for it and stuff. So I'm walking him through there and some old guy stops me and he goes, is this the dog from Kakamone, the name of our house? And I said, yes, the one and only. And he goes, oh, I've seen him before. And he yells at his like 8-year-old kid, get the phone. Take a picture of me with the dog. Get a picture of me with the dog. Okay. Now send it to your brother. I don't know how to do that. Do you want a picture with the dog? And it's like, he's become a little mascot. With the hunters for sure. And some of them are terrified of him because he's so gigantic, but most of them just stop and Cabello. One old guy said his ears were like cashmere. I loved it.
Well, we were very, I love that dog. He's awesome. Giant Great Dane.
Mm-hmm. What other animal updates?
We got a puppy.
We got a puppy.
We got a buddy for Leroy, the Maggie Moo. We got she was tiny. Now she's a little bit. She's 3 months old now. We got her a month ago.
She's an English cream golden retriever. And she is freaking fucking bonkers.
Totally different dog.
I know. Leroy was a size of, like, he was 3 months old when we got him. And what looked like the size of a full-grown, medium-sized dog.
Yeah.
And his movements were very deliberate when he got up or sat down. He was used to the crate training because Great Danes have to rest after they eat. And he was at a place where they definitely did that and had them in different runs, if you will, whatever, where Maggie, the little puppy, was just still puppy pile. And she just, not only is she just floppity and just whatever, loses all bodily control and rolls down hills and all this stuff, but she just is a bit different. Like, she wants to be around you more than he did.
We have fought the crate since the first day.
Leroy loved it.
But yeah, she's a yapper, which we've been trying to solve. She barks at this pitch that sends anger down my spine.
Jason was calling her the terrorist for a week or two.
It's just this, I don't know what it is. When Leroy barks, it is a deep, and it's one. He doesn't bark like yap, 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 yap. We're working on it, but that's something we have to work out of her, because I hate, we all do.
Oh, yeah, no one's happy about that. But it means Leroy wants to stay closer to home, because during the fall with the hunters, there was a month, let's call it, where all these freaking dogs were in heat, and he would just take off for like 2 hours, 3 hours into the woods and just go look for the ladies. The power. It was powerful, I'll tell you what. But thankfully, guys, it is all settled down.
So enough of the dogs. The dogs are doing well. Animal updates on the pigs. The pigs are coming to the end. I think it's January we're going to slaughter them. I have one of the local butchers is going to help me out, and then we will take the parts that we want to get cured into prosciutto or lonza or whatever we're going to do. We'll take that up to Acqua Partita, the Hunter's Hideaway, because they have a whole setup, and they have all these different chambers. They can put, they're professionals at it. I don't really feel like ruining it.
No, they have set up, for people who haven't been up there, a series of fridges, a series of, let's call them, walk-in refrigerators at different temperatures and humidities. And the whole idea is it is to replicate the feel of winter. So, which is when they traditionally would cure the meats here. So, they've got the whole setup, and they've got a beautiful place, this big long wooden, walk-in where they can do long-term storage for things like the prosciuttos and big pieces that we
prosciuttos would need about a year and a half, and I don't obviously have anywhere to keep them. And the last two times I've done the sausages and salamis over the winter, it's been ruined because the air temperature was too warm. Too warm. So I'm not going to mess around with it this year. It took too long to raise these pigs and too much care. We're going to take all the parts that we wanted age like that
cure
and send them up there. The only thing I want to do myself at home is I want to make real bacon.
Ooh.
We have pancetta here, but it's not bacon. Bacon is has sugar in it, and it's slightly smoked. They don't really do pancetta like that. They'll cure it in the salt, but it's not the same.
Not only bacon, but mama wants some ham.
Oh yeah. Ashley wants me to. But, Ashley,
okay, prosciutto's everywhere. Yes, great. We'll do one prosciutto, but I want...
Well, I'm not going to take the whole
leg. The culatella.
Yeah, we'll take one of the muscle groups, and we'll make a ham, like a traditional country.
That is not found out here.
No, not really. So that's the plan for the... we're going to slaughter them at home, and it's a lot better for the animals, and we're allowed to do up to 4 a year, I think, at home, and the neighbor down the road does his pigs over the winter at home, so he can help out, and transport's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to slaughter them and then let them hang out and bleed out for, I think, 12 hours, and that'll be done outside. That's why we're doing it. We'll use the cross beams of the barn I just built to string them up. And
our Dutch neighbor's clicker.
Yep, with one of those cricks. And then how do we get it? Either I have to get it into sections here, or do I just bring the whole thing up to Acqua Partita, splayed open, and load it into the van? But this pig weighs, I don't even know how much.
The big boy's a big boy.
Big boy, yeah, he's got a big ass on him.
I don't even know how you would know. We won't know until the end.
Yeah, that's true. We won't know until the end.
That's crazy.
And it'll be minus all the all the entrails and stuff. Mm-hmm. So whatever. We'll figure that out. We're going to do it after New Year's, because that's when all the butchers kind of slow down. Obviously, between Christmas and New Year's is not a good time, and it's I'm just going to work around. Like, 2 weeks one way or the other isn't going to make a huge bit of difference, so I'll just do it when everyone has a moment free. And that's usually after New Year's, between New Year's and the Epiphany, January 6th. So I'll be sad to see them go. I can't do it. I definitely can't do the
pull the trigger.
No, because they've become...
You boop them. They boop you.
They boop me. They come up every morning when I go to feed them. They come up to the fence and they know my voice and I give them boops. And then we all run over to the trough and they have much more personality than I thought they would have.
It was within 2 weeks you were like, I can't kill these guys.
But this isn't a this isn't an animal sanctuary. We spent a ton of money, time and money raising them. And they're going to be delicious. They got really good, like... They're going to be good.
Well, speaking of animal sanctuary, one of the reason you built the barn or the stall to begin with was for a cow, for a milk cow.
Yeah, I've always wanted
any of the guests that came
cow.
This year, I was like, that's where the milk cow's going.
Okay, so then we built the stall, got everything, and then when I sat down with a pen and paper and said, all right, how is this going to work? What is it going to cost? Blah, 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 blah. Obviously, the cost is a lot because we don't have any of the infrastructure. So that I understand. It's the time. So a couple of things I didn't realize. One is the type of grass you give the cow is fundamental. I mean, grass in, milk out. So the reason why you find these areas where great milk is produced is because they have great grass for the cows to eat.
Same with these pigs. These are Chintasinese. They're finished off. They were raised in or used to be under the oak trees, and all of the little nuts and oaks or acorns they would eat and help make them so sweet and delicious. So it's so obviously so much about what they ate, but we hadn't really thought about
that. All around here is nothing but fields of grass growing for animals.
So it's like, yeah, great.
And what I didn't realize is that, yes, we have hay for the meat producing cows, but the ones that produce milk obviously need more nutrients. When you look at, like, we have alfalfa growing around here, and when you see the alfalfa in the spring flowering, there'll be a smattering of the purpley flowers mm-hmm. that alfalfa has. And then you'll look from, like, the Piemonte region or up in the Alps, and it's a field of the purpley flowers. The grass is so much
richer.
Greener and richer, and that's what you need to make. It's not just a question of getting the type of cow, the correct type, and bringing them down here. You also have to
take into consideration
the feed. So now there's always workarounds, right? I can always buy a year's worth of this good grass and have it shipped down, but now I have to store. It's just another it's another step in complication that I didn't realize because I'm an idiot and a noob and look out and say, well, there's a field in front of my house of alfalfa that's growing.
Eat it.
And yes, she'll produce milk, but she's not going to produce the milk that I want to, that I have in my head. And why do all this if it's
exactly.
just going to produce milk?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, it's okay. So that's one problem. Second problem is the... not the milking of the cow twice a day, but the processing of the milk. So it's not a big deal when we have no one here to homogenize it or process it into butter or whatever you're going to do with it. But milking is one thing. It's 20 or 30 minutes twice a day, and okay, you can work that into your day. But then what do I do when I have cooking classes and breakfast for 20 and all that, and I'm looking at 50 liters of milk just – spoiling.
I know. We still need guests to pay for the cow.
Yeah, that's the thing. We have to have one cow. You really can't. And then that's – one cow's not enough to make a production of anything to sell. It's a lot for a family or mm-hmm. it's a lot for two people. It's way too much for two people. But it's a lot. It's not enough to like say, oh, well, we'll just make butter and sell some butter. It's – you need five cows to have enough to make butter to sell. So it was...
The reality started to set in. It's a fun idea. It's a great idea. I love that Jason has these crazy curiosities of things like this he wants to do. But what is the reality?
And there's always workarounds to all these problems. Well, you can keep the calf on the cow and the calf can eat the milk and then you don't have as much milk to process. Okay. It's just when you start never put dreams on paper. Because never put the reality of your dream onto paper, because then you look at, we would never be here if we.
Well, no, that's not true. I tell the consulting guests, our clients all the time, to write stuff out, or with like for the properties and things like that, what they really want versus what they need.
Yeah. So when you put it down on paper and you think about, well, how would my day go? Milking a cow, taking care of the other animals that we have, walking the dog, tending to a garden, and giving guests the experience that they have paid for and deserve. Other than starting to hire a bunch of staff, which...
And we're still remote. That just becomes difficult also. So then it was like, well, Jason was like, well, I got this big stall. What am I going to do with it? And so then the next idea, which was short-lived, but was a draft horse. Because we can't find a freaking tractor that's small to maneuver. And, oh, that was still another thing with cow. We still needed some machinery to be able to move
stuff.
Yeah,
that's part of the huge investment that you never will see back on. You'll never see the return
back.
It's
not just building some stalls and infrastructure that way. It was also...
No, the bale... So if I buy the hay comes in giant 500-kilo bales. How do you move that? You need a big tractor with a fork on the front to move the bale, and then you need a place to store all that. So if we're not going to store it on the property somewhere, and store it somewhere around town with someone who already has barn space, great. Now how do I transport a 500-kilo round bale of hay?
Even if the farm has a forklift, how do you know it's to put it on? Now how do you get it off? And yes, we have the gigantic tractor from Foosh, but
it doesn't have a fork on the front, and that thing is not, I'm not going to invest a bunch of money in putting that on there. So finding a smaller tractor that has a fork on the front that can lift 750 kilos is not...
And we love you guys that still listen to this podcast, even though we randomly do it. But please don't feel the need to send us some like awesome small tractors from the States that don't cost that much, because we know they exist, but they just don't really exist here. Or they're super expensive here.
Yes, because there's not that market so much for it. If you want a giant tractor mm-hmm. with a fork on the front, that's not a problem. But that medium-sized is more of a problem. They do exist in Europe, but I'm not going to France to get one. Or I understand
spend 50 grand.
50 grand to get one, and I'm not. I don't want to do that. So
we thought draft horse.
Draft horse. First of all, a draft horse will match my dog perfectly.
They'll size right.
Yes, they're of the same size. They're of the same cut.
Uh-huh.
And draft horse, I just think draft horses are beautiful. I'm not into riding a horse, but a draft horse that could pull a cart or could plow a field or, you know, I have these dreams, right? I'm a kid from the suburbs who doesn't know anything about anything, and it's like, yeah, that looks fun.
This is Jason's version of a midlife crisis.
Well, again, now you start thinking, I thought a horse once it... Okay, we'll get a trained horse that already knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand. So then I start doing research, and it's like, no, a horse is not like a machine that once it, you know, that...
Shuts off and turns on normally.
Normally, and does the same job over and over. You have to you have to keep the training up with the horse. And
so you need to still, like... tack him up and work him every few days and all of this. And then Jason was also realizing, watching a bunch of these YouTube videos, most often there's not just one horse.
No, there's not. I mean, do you see just one horse plowing a field? It's usually two horses pulling a cart or two horses plowing a field. And I don't want two horses.
Mm-hmm.
I want a horse and a couple of goats to keep the horse company.
So we've amended that idea. And we're back to the original idea is start with a donkey. Get a donkey and get some little goats. And our neighbor has goats. He's got a hilarious menage of animals down the road, from goats and geese to dogs to I don't even know what else he's got. It just depends on what day you drive by. So we're going to talk to him about getting a couple little baby goats for the spring. And then Jason has had a hankering for a donkey for a long time anyway, and those are easy to find. Now, the only problem with a donkey is They have a super long life expectancy.
Yeah, donkeys live forever. I didn't like realize 60 40 years. To 60. Some donkeys can live 60 years, and they make this crazy donkey noise.
Well, but I think I could get over some of that. The pigs made a ton of noise and stuff, too, in different ways. But 60 years, holy shit. So we got to get a middle-aged donkey or something that...
But I built this stall. What the hell am I going to do with it?
That's what's also hilarious. But
I still want a milk cow. We'll see. Maybe one day we'll win the lottery or... Well, you have to play the lottery. But one day maybe someone somehow will find a field of oil under... oil reserve underneath one of these fields. And
you never know.
And get to have a milk
cow. No, it'll be fracking. God. So what else with the garden? We did something different for the first time and planted 1,000 saffron bulbs. They were like small, like what would... gigantic pieces of garlic? Like, what would you say? They were tiny. We thought they'd look more like... they were large. They were the largest you could get, but they were still a
circumference. We thought they would be more like tulip bulbs, that exactly. size, and they were not. No. They were more like an unshelled almond size.
Sure. Something like that.
And you can plant them extremely close together. We didn't plant them close together enough.
No.
We spaced them out too much, I think, so the next round I'll do them. But they're...
We got them from here, from within Italy. And
You plant them over the summer.
They shipped them to us at like... End of August or something?
No.
Mid-August.
No. End of July. I planted them in August.
Oh, okay.
You just make... You hill up the earth, and then you plant them really tight together and about, I don't know, 10 centimeters down, so like 3-4 inches down. And then do nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Don't water them?
Don't water them. Don't do anything. You just leave them. And once the spring... The rains come of the autumn, sorry, that waters them in, and they
and
start...
And if you didn't get, like, a good heavy rain...
Yeah, there was a date that if you didn't get any water by this date, go ahead and irrigate. But we got water by whatever... I think it was the end of September or something, and I think we got a good storm in late September.
Yeah, we did.
And then up come...
Oh, and you had overflowed the cistern.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I left the pump on one day and overflowed the cistern, and it flooded the whole top of the garden where the
saffron is.
So I guess that was a good
done
watering,
and
too.
Done.
They come up in, like, October. You start seeing these little mm-hmm. fingers that almost look like a grassy type.
Yeah, exactly.
Type thing. And then followed by the flowers. The flowers come in overnight. You have to pick them.
This is the most serious way to do it.
This is the only way to do it.
Well, when you read other sites, they don't say that.
Okay. If I didn't do this, then I would come out to flowers that were just melted.
Exactly.
So this is the way to do it. So you have to pick them that morning. If it rains, you'll have damage to the flowers. They'll start melting away. And the little saffron, what would you call them? The pistil? No, is it the pistil?
Stamen?
Stamen?
They're called threads.
Threads. There you go. The little saffron threads would fall away from the plant and land on the dirt and mud, and now it's just a pain to pick them up. So it's best if you get them, if you want dry weather, you have to get them before the sun hits them. If the sun hits them, then the sun just makes those flowers wilt away, and it degrades the saffron. So mm-hmm. it was easy to plant and cultivate. It was a pain in the butt not a pain in the butt. We only had 1,000.
But 1,000 bulbs, each bulb was 3 flowers.
Each bulb had 3 flowers. Mm-hmm. So, and they would come up in chunks. And there was like a big push
like
in the
waves.
Middle. Waves. There was a little bit at first and then a big middle wave. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of started to peter out. And the weather got bad.
Yeah.
We got a lot more rain. And it wasn't even worth like picking up these muddy threads. But all in
so
all.
So he would come up with like. Buckets of
like a bucket at a time of flowers.
And I would sit there at breakfast or different times and pluck out the threads.
The flowers are beautiful and they have the sweetest smell.
So good.
Such a good like floral. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just this beautiful floral smell. It was really nice. All that work for 17 grams of.
Is that how much we actually got?
We got 17 grams.
That's a lot.
No.
Oh. Well,
a kilo is 1,000 grams.
We did okay.
We got 3 tiny little jars.
I thought we got 40 grams.
No.
Oh.
Absolutely not.
That would have looked a lot more.
Yeah.
Well, We're doing little Christmas presents for them.
So what do you do with it? Then you have to dry the threads. So Ashley stuck them on like these little racks and let them just air dry. And then you have to cure them in glass jars.
For about a month or so before you use it.
And then we got these tiny little vials that we'll put like a serving for four people of the threads in and little boxes and kind of just...
Dude, it's Christmas
presents. Give them away as our Christmas presents and save one little jar for ourselves. Because honestly, I don't use a lot
of saffron.
That's what
I was just going to say. And hilariously, everyone's been like, oh, great. So what kind of recipes do you have for it?
And
it's like a risotto.
A risotto. I guess you can do like a panna cotta with saffron.
Would that be good? Or is it just the color? Like, I don't even know. I always think of it as savory. But I don't know.
No, you can absolutely use it. Okay. Maki does gelato with saffron
right.
in it.
But the way you do this, we have to look into this because the way you use the threads is different than the powder because the powder dissolves into everything where the threads can stay thicker. So you either have to...
You think of them like tea. You got to use them like tea almost.
Mm-hmm.
Where, yeah, the powder is just the ones that fall apart that they grind up into a powder. So, yeah, that was fun. And every other year, you can dig them up and split them. So we'll have one more year of 1,000 bulbs, and then we'll see. Maybe next year, we'll dig them up, and after next year, we'll dig them up, split them, and now we'll have more. Or we can –
it wasn't that much. It was a good test to do.
Something different. Mm-hmm. I get bored with doing tomatoes and zucchini. And
they're at the top of the garden, so you see the pretty flowers for you. I mean, it's a ton of work, but – they grow in bad soil.
Yeah, and rocky, poor uh-huh. soil. So it worked out great.
Mm-hmm.
Next, this is the end of the big gardens. I'm done.
So he says.
No. I'm speaking it into the microphone. I'm writing myself.
Speak truth.
I'm writing myself a letter, a note. It's over. I don't need.
It's a bit much.
I don't need 300 tomato plants every year. I grow a whole pumpkin patch for nothing.
I love it, but the problem with pumpkins is he has to pull them early every year because somehow, some way, the porcupine find a way in and have hidden.
I need to do better on my fencing.
Well, and then we have to pull them all early because they start eating them.
We don't eat them.
But I love having them everywhere.
I understand, but I fed more pumpkins to pigs this year than we consumed.
I know.
All the zucchinis, all the onions we'll keep. I love the onions.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Just the amount that we do every year is just – I'm just ready to do other things than just tend to a garden all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do boxes. I want to do less quantity but more quality. Like, can I take a third of the amount of tomatoes and see how much I can – really get them to produce if we can control the soil instead of trying to fertilize an entire like half an hectare of soil. What if I had 12 large boxes and we'll go from there? Some things can't go in boxes, like onions have to go in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
If we do corn or something, but we do small amounts of that. Mm-hmm. It's really the tomatoes.
It's always the tomatoes.
It's always the tomatoes are by far the most.
We were so sick of them by the end of the season and the guests, and we had guests until the first week of November. Those freaking guests, they couldn't handle it. They're like, we can't stand it. All those gorgeous tomatoes. I mean, we were feeding them, like serving tomatoes in different meals.
We've jarred them this year. Like, we're done.
They went down one afternoon and they all got together and picked a ton of the tomatoes and brought them back up. And they were like, we hope we didn't make too much work for you guys. But we just couldn't help, see them on the vine and just want to come and pick them. And it was like, it was so nice of them, but it was hilarious because we were just so like, yeah, if you want to go for it. It's like, whatever.
Yeah, we were just sick of them.
The pigs were sick of them. The chickens were sick of them.
It was a long tomato year. It wasn't the greatest tomato year. Like, the fruit wasn't the, like, most, uh-huh. most
But
incredible.
Because we didn't get a freeze or anything.
They just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
So, garden is, all the crap is still in there. I didn't pick up anything from the garden. The poles are still down there. All the irrigation system is out.
This GD puppy is a ton of work.
I know.
I don't know how people do it. Something else animal farm related. You helped out our neighbor at the end of the year with the Transhumanza.
We did the transfer of the beasts, the Transhumanza. So in the spring, we walked the cows from these barn up into the grazing fields. Some of the grazing fields are on top of Monte Nerone. Some are right here on top of Monte Maggiore. And they walk them up there and leave them all summer long to graze and grass-fed, you know, not wild, but it's a huge, huge preserve up there, if you will. And in the autumn, depending on the time of year, depends on how the grass is, and we had a wetter, warmer autumn. So we came down late this year. We came down in like middle November. Of November.
Yeah. And other years it's October.
And it's a fun morning, whether we're taking them from the stall up or from the fields down. It's crack of dawn. You get up there. We round up all the – we have to round up all the cows because they were broke off into two different clicks, if you will. And then get them – we're at the top of Monte Maggiore, and you can see to the sea, and you see Monte Nerone, and you see – like, it's just the panoramic view is absolutely incredible. It is freezing. The wind is blowing. Like, we're dressed for it. The wind is blowing so hard that any amount of skin that's exposed, instantly you feel it. Luckily, we're not up there for a long time. We start walking down almost immediately, and this is not walking down like a road. There are cow trails, but the cows, like, you know, you've seen City Slickers, right? except we're on foot.
Now, there are some horses.
There are horses. There were 10 horsemen, five of which knew what they were doing, and five of which I thought, I'm not going to get too close to that guy because he really doesn't look to me like he knows how to command a horse.
And these horses were not prepared.
No. Four horses just quit. I think that they wouldn't go anymore because they walked them all the way up the hill, and then as we're going back down, it's not all downhill because we're kind of going up and over different things in through the
wood.
Yeah,
wrangling the cows.
Yeah. Four of them just quit. And I was talking to one guy, why'd that horse quit? And it's because they don't work the horses. They leave the horse in the stalls and the stables, and they don't exercise them properly. So, like a person, they just can't – they're not in shape.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was – it's just funny to see a horse quit. Like, the guy pulling – like in a cartoon where they pull on the rein – like, they get off the horse and start pulling the horse, and the horse just doesn't want to move. That's it. We had one poor cow that was so pregnant, she was waddling, and she just couldn't. I don't know why they even made her try, but she made it about 30 minutes into the walk and then quit too. So they had to come back with the tractor and get her on into the trailer. And it's like she was so pregnant.
Like, her udders were like dragging on the ground.
Her udders were dragging on the ground when you walked behind her. She was so her hips were so narrow and her belly was so wide. I don't know why they even. There's no way. This is like a 4 or 5 hour walk. It's not far as the crow flies at all. It's really not. But there's no direct route. You have to go up and over the hill and down into the valley and back and up and over the hill and. Yeah, she didn't do it.
Poor thing.
Poor thing. But it's a great morning. And then some people stayed for lunch. I was done and needed to come home and help Ashley out with these dogs. So I did not stay for lunch. But it's a wonderful morning nonetheless. And you get to feel part of like you did something today. Like, whoa, we brought the cows home minus one.
Yeah, it is. It's a nice community thing too.
Absolutely. So the cows are safe and sound. They'll be there until probably May-ish.
Yeah.
In the barn.
Mm-hmm. And how many were there? Sorry.
There were 32, I believe.
Okay.
And 30 or 31 made it home there.
All right.
Not great. Like, these aren't giant fat farms,
no,
right?
No.
These are, like, small kind of small.
Yeah, like 40 is a big year for him or
yeah.
So. Mm-hmm.
So not a ton.
So what else this autumn? Oh, we were sold out, and we will be again this year, so book early, but for the Truffle Festival weekends and our truffle hunting holidays. And it started off as a not great truffle year because of the rains didn't come at the right time. But there were some truffles. They weren't super expensive because they weren't that great this year. But we still had a blast with the guests going and going hunting and going to the different truffle festivals. And this winter, I ended up, or this fall, at numerous different festivals and meals taking with the guests. And the first one always kicks off in a Pekio. And Jason came, my best friend's dad was in town with his sister who had taken over the farmhouse, and the ladies all went out for lunch. And we went with old Jerball that evening into the festival. And it was great because you never know where you're going to eat. Like, you go and make a reservation at one of these like cantinas or pop-up restaurants because everything sells out quick for the seats. And it was like, let's at least just have a place to sit and get some pasta. And so I just put my name, you know, called one of the random numbers, put my name in, and we show up and you follow them like down through a hallway, through some corridor, up some steps. You're like, where are they leading us to? And it was some super cool cantina. What would you even call it?
It was
like an old stall. We're in the center of town. So that's why it's also like, you all of a sudden feel like you're in the
And the steps stall aren't the steps aren't even. Farmhouse. You have to really watch yourself because they're not of the same width or distance between the steps. And it was like, yeah, the old cantina, like the deepest part of the under the building.
And all stone and the big chunks of wood, and it was just like, what are we in? This is so cool.
A little wet, a little musty.
Uh-huh.
It is funny. Couple things. One, it's funny eating white truffles off paper plates.
Of course. That's my favorite part.
And it is funny what you will accept for the experience, because this was, while the surroundings were like really, it wasn't comfortable.
The chairs
doesn't sit correctly because it's on these weird stone. And
everything's slightly wobbly.
Yeah, the table's too small.
Wine comes in old water bottles.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's just kind of comfortable, and it's, you do it for the experience, but refined.
Not at all. And then the one I take the guests to in Aqualania, they have got it set up. Finally, after years of just kind of getting rained out so much, they have done this huge covered food tent with six of the different local restaurants, and you walk up to their little stall in the tent and order and eat in there, which is great. And again, it's hilarious because everything's on the paper plates. This is like almost more of like a not a beer house, but like, what is that?
It's more like an enoteca that you
No. The feel, like in Oktoberfest, where it's like a big hall feel. There's just tons of people, and everyone's drinking and eating and singing, and it's a blast.
And since this year was warm, it was packed.
These were finally full.
Because after, you know, COVID, there was nothing that year. And then kind of after the couple of years after COVID, they weren't the same. Like, no one wanted to really invest money in it because they didn't know what was going on.
Uh-huh.
And this year finally felt like the towns made the investment. They got the word out, and it was packed.
It was great. And then I went to one in Sant'Angelo with another set of guests. And this one, I did the same thing. Okay, let me just get a dinner reservation at one of these random restaurants so we just have a place to sit and have some pasta at least. And we go in, and I was like, guys, I don't know what this building is. I've never been in here before. Who knows what we're going to find upstairs? It's an adventure. Okay. We go up, the doors open, and all of a sudden they look at me. They're like, are you sure we're supposed to be here? Is this a wedding reception? It was in, for lack of a better term, like a palace in the city, like one of those old, a palazzo, like a beautiful old high ceilings with frescoes on the ceilings. And a restaurant from Fano on the coast took over this building and made it as like a pop-up restaurant on this floor. And it was stunning. And I was just jaw dropped. Like, there's the amuse bouche or whatever it's called. What is it called? Amuse bouche.
That's Sorry, I should talk into it. Like,
I know.
That's French.
I know it is, but I just mean it was like the fancy, like...
Oh, all the different little plates with all the forks.
Oh, and here's something from the compliments of the chef as you sit down and all of this. And it was beautiful, but this one was so refined. I just kept cracking up because I was like, oh my God, normally, you guys, we are in a basement cantina.
Cold and wet.
Cold and wet. Still, however... Oh, and most of these places... have no bathrooms. Thankfully, this place, they had a bathroom, but Sant'Angelo was terrible. You had to go, like, way to the center of the town to find some cafe that the bathroom was unlocked because there was they got rid of all the porta-potties. However, Aquilania, on the bathroom, they do a good job. It's right outside of the tents, and the men have porta-potties, and they have a real restroom set up for the ladies there, which I like. Side note. So those are important things. I know parking's always an issue.
I have something to say about all of these festivals.
What?
One thing is, every 50 meters is another asshole with headphones around his neck, blaring another DJ, playing the most god-awful techno music. And it's so, they're so close to each other and they try to outdo each other. Everyone has like a, yeah, it's like dueling DJs. Everyone that you go to, it's the same thing. It's like the DJ setup. They have the little revolving light and a little spotlight on him, and everything's got the like jizzy LED all over it. Whether it's a 20-something-year-old kid or I saw some people who were way too old to be doing this.
I think they wanted to be disc jockeys.
It's horrible and it needs to stop. It's
a little much.
Well, the beats of all the different shit going on clash with each other, and it just gives you a headache.
Oh, yeah.
Am I old? Is this me? Am I officially old, or am I just grumpy? Or is this what they... Fine. Have an area, or have a couple of them, but we don't need one every 30
and
to 50
so
meters.
Loud.
And so loud.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. And no one likes... We were there at... We're not there at 11 o'clock at night. We're there at 5:30 in the afternoon. No, the average age of the person walking around is 69 years and 5 months, pushing strollers and shit. No one wants to listen to this.
No.
Not at that hour.
No.
I understand. After dinner, once the kids come out, they want to listen to this horrible, god-awful shit. Let them. But why in the early evening?
I don't know. They love it. They love it. Thankfully, the Aquilania one had, like... jazzy band playing and stuff, and a little better. That one was not the dueling DJs because they just had one music set up at the little main piazza.
All the other ones, it was dueling DJs.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And a Pecchio, tiny too. I know. You go around the corner, you're like, oh my god, it's in my face. What else is going on? We've now that the guests have checked out. Hilariously, we do this without them. Testing coffees.
Yeah, so inflation in Italy has hit hard this last year and a half, especially in fruits and vegetables, insane prices, and coffee. Coffee has gone up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we would always get, we've gotten for the last 15 years the same coffee, Cafe Lavazza Oro, the gold one. And it was the price to, it was good quality coffee at a, you know, at a decent price.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that's gone up to... kind of the quality has gone down a little bit and the price has gone really up. So now we're to the point where for a few more euros, let's say 10 more euros a kilo, you can get the artisanal ones. So we contacted the supplier for Maki. We got all the good stuff we get it through Maki, the gelateria's contacts. They know good chocolate, good coffee, good nuts, good
vanilla.
They have the hook. They know the people to go to.
They got a guy
for everything. So we've been trying out coffees. So first we tried out all these coffees from South and Central America.
Mm-hmm.
And Juan Valdez did not impress me very much.
No.
In the sense that they were lighter and I love coffee. So
yeah, but there was nothing that made us go, oh.
Oh, okay, that's good, and that's worth it. So we didn't get it, and that we did that in the spring, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we didn't get anything for this summer. Then come the autumn, it's like, all right, let's try them out again. Let's try Africa. So we tried all the African coffees, and there was one. Was it Ghana? No.
No, Rwanda.
Rwanda. Cafe Rwanda. It tastes like dried fruit and coffee and
dark chocolate.
And it's... It's really, really good. So you're coming out here this year for a stay in the spring or summer or autumn. You will have Cafe Rwanda this year.
Exactly. Very good.
Very good. Ooh, good. Oh, oh. It makes me want to hold the coffee cup with two hands by the fire.
Well, and if you get the cream milk ratio right, it's kind of got the hot chocolatey taste to it because of that dark chocolatiness, and it's good.
I would call it
not acidic.
No, it's very low on the acidity wheel. So when you get into all the...
And Kaji comes over and we're trying all these different stuff. He's always like, what the hell?
So we tried like 8 different coffees. We got a little like 250-gram sampler of these 8 different coffees. And each one of them comes with a, you know, where it's from and how it's toasted.
Origin story.
The altitude at which it's picked from. And then like this wheel that shows you like the
flavor wheel.
So I'm showing all this to God. She goes, I don't want this bullshit. You know, kind of get this bullshit out of here. But he agreed. He liked Hotel Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
It was. So,
more of a winter coffee, though. We might have to think about one for the summer because it's a little heavy and a little like big for the summertime when it's so hot. We might want to get a second one that's not so – like a wine. You don't want a giant red wine when it's 100 degrees outside.
This is true.
You want something a little nicer and a little lighter and crisper.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll get a second one for the summer.
Yes. We'll do another tasting for summer coffees.
That's the big talk around here. If anyone is still listening to this podcast, God bless you. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, bless your heart.
Bless your heart. Why people even listen to this drab as we go on and on?
Here, we'll save a good story for the end. We were literally not invited to make Cappelletti and to Christmas this year. Gachi and Rosanna came over because they want to hang out with the dogs. And hilariously, side note, Gachi comes over and he wants to win over Maggie's affection with dog treats. Well, thankfully, they stopped with the potato chips and they bring over little
like these dried biscuity things.
Like little dried toast things, whatever. And not sweet. And so he comes, and instead of like breaking off a piece and handing it to a dog, like you would think that's normal, he likes to take it in a handful of them, crumble them up onto the ground into like sand.
Literally take his fist and just
crush it into
and then sprinkle it on the
kitchen floor. And then he goes, oh, wow, look at Maggie. She's so good. And it's like, oh, my God, old man, you're a doctor.
If I came over to your house, first of all, I would never, ever do that. Never, ever, ever, ever. So it's either one thing, he doesn't care, or two, he's sending a message. Your floor is so dirty, it doesn't even matter.
Rosanna came over. She went to do it, but she stopped him from doing it on the floor, which is his favorite place, and said, put it on the hearth. What are you, an animal? And I thought, oh, good. Next time he comes over, we'll put it on the hearth.
Because, there's already dust and
from the fireplace. Nope. Next morning, first thing he comes over, pulls out from his pocket and just crumbles it all. Nice trail along the kitchen floor. So anyway, they came over for a little aperitivo or dinner one night. And
To inform us
that, well, you now have another dog. I don't see how you have time. You're not obviously not coming to do the Cappelletti with us, with the neighbors, which is a total tradition. And you're not coming to Christmas because that's a whole day in the car to Città di Castello over the hill and back. And you can't be gone from the house this long. So obviously you guys aren't invited. Straightforward, cut and dry. I was like,
yeah, well, okay.
Okay. I was like, well, do you guys want to come over for Christmas Eve? They're like, we've had so many invitations. It was hilarious. They're like, we have so many invitations. We have to figure out what we're doing. But also, it's dodgy to bullet that Christmas Day drive with Gachi.
So, Gachi, so we drive over the hill, which is all over the Apennines, which is all turns the whole way. It's probably about 30 kilometers.
It's climbing and turning.
Climbing and turning. And then you get to the top and you descend and turn. Going there is okay because it's 11 o'clock in the morning and no one's had anything to drink. Coming home, it gets dark early. It's 5:36 in the evening and Gachi just had ended Christmas lunch with a lot of whiskey.
And his eyesight is questionable already.
Yeah, it gets worse at night. I would say it gets more dangerous at night. So the windows are fogged up. We are going over the path. Like, this is what the Lifetime movie of the week kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Killed on Christmas.
Killed on Christmas. Absolutely. He speeds up on the straight parts and then brakes hard and goes real slow around the corners. Or he misjudges it because he can't tell the distance very well. So we go into the corner too fast, kind of throwing us outside
and then
brakes hard and then comes back in. Either way, you just cross your fingers. And
I know. And we're both just like wide-eyed in the back seat like, oh, my God. What we've taken our hands, our life into our own hands again. So bullet dodge, but also hilariously
and a little
uninvited.
Sad. And a little sad.
I know.
But he is right. This dog does not have the little
bladder
one.
Strength.
Okay. The Great Dane has we call him bucket bladder. That guy can go 24 hours without peeing. And when he does let it all go in one spot, it's impressive. She has a bladder the size of a thimble. Mm-hmm. Every 2.5 to 3 hours, this dog needs to pee. And it's like, that's what we went outside for, your little 3 drops of tinkle.
Triple, triple.
So she's not wrong in the sense that she can't stay more than 2 or 3 hours. And Christmas is Christmas lunch is 8 hours solid commitment. We entertained a couple weekends ago, which was fine. I like the people who came over. But let me tell you, it started at noon and they left at 7:30 in the evening. I like I like them. But if you're going to have a 7-8 hour commitment, I need to know ahead of time. We could have stopped it at 3.5 or 4.
Part of the problem could have been your wife.
Yeah, but. Oof.
I was having a great time.
I know.
Jason's like, can we wrap it up? Play the wrap it up music from the Oscars.
Yeah, we can't go into, like, everyone's looking around for now dinner because it's it's like bedtime soon. The dogs have to be, like, it's time for the dogs to go to bed. 8 hours is a little much.
It is. It is.
But other than that, our lives are wake up, feed animals, clean,
Prepare lunch,
maybe get a little time to sit down for a minute, and then everyone wants to be walked, fed, and put back down again. We don't do
and
a lot.
It seriously feels like young parents, like new parents, I should say, in the sense of then by the time everyone's finally gone to bed by 8 o'clock, you're just exhausted.
Yeah.
And technically, we didn't really get much of anything done throughout the day, so you should be able to, like, you're up and put in a good 2 hours of something, and it's like, let's just turn on an old Law and Order and fall asleep.
I wish we had great stories of going to the Christmas markets in the north and cutting down a Christmas tree.
Which is what we wanted to do.
All the things going on in Italy. But honestly,
honestly, here's what we're doing to suffice that. I love Mr. Snowplow, P-L-O-W. It is a YouTube channel of a guy up in the Alps. There's a couple of them, but this guy, I like his videos the best. No words, just the hum of the motor and sometimes the beep of the reverse. And he's plowing fresh snow in the Alps in these beautiful roads, either first thing in the morning or super late at night. And I just kind of get hypnotized by that.
Ashley's watching snowplow videos. I come in and it's like, what are you watching?
I said I took a nap on the couch. He goes, there's nothing to even hear. I go, it was the sound of the truck. I was like, it was great. I fell right to sleep. Jeez. So we're stuck at home with the animals. And especially once the pigs get slaughtered, then maybe late in the winter we'll do a little trip and have someone come over and watch the dogs. But for now, we're here.
So if you got through the last 57 minutes and you're still there, God bless
you. Oh, bravi.
Thank you very much. Bring it home.
You know where to find us, latavolamarche.com. If you're looking for a holiday, latavolamarche.com. And Instagram, Twitter, all the animals have their own pages. So we got, everyone, it's ridiculous out here. But at latavolamarche, you can find us for everything.
All right. Thanks for listening. We will... I have no idea.
No, I know. So, buon Natale. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Who knows when we'll do it again, but hopefully in a few weeks.
If we'll have absolutely nothing new to talk about.
Unless something great happens.
Unless something great happens.
All right. Have a good one, guys. Ciao, ciao.